Hello there. Today is Tuesday, October 3rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the latest on the worst mass shooting in modern U.S. history.
Heard like a pop, pop, pop noise.
The bartenders were saying, get down, there's been a shooting. I'm like, what? What is those firecrackers? And they're like, no, get down. And people would start dropping down all around me.
But we saw that someone on the right hand of the stage was injured. Everyone just started calling like for help for that person.
It was an act of pure evil.
President Trump will be in Las Vegas Wednesday, then visiting hurricane-ravaged Puerto Rico later today. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, the United States is in shock over a mass shooting in Las Vegas, Nevada. Police say a man opened fire on a country music concert late Sunday, killing at least 59 people and wounding more than 500 others in the deadliest mass shooting in U.S. history. Las Vegas Metropolitan Police identified the shooter as 64-year-old white male Stephen Paddock of Mesquite, Nevada. The gunman attacked the crowd of over 22,000 from his hotel room on the 32nd floor of the Mandalay Bay Casino, located across the street from the outdoor venue, where video showed concertgoers ducking for cover, screaming and running as the repeated shots rang out. Country star Jason Aldean was performing on stage at the time of the shooting. Witnesses described the chaos.
I just came out of the bathroom and I heard what was a rat-a-tat-tat, and I thought it sounded like somebody had thrown a brick of fireworks at the front entrance of the VIP entrance down there on the sidewalk. And that went off, and I thought that was really weird, so I walked up to the top of the stairs to go back into the tent, the VIP tent, and the bartenders were saying, get down, there's been a shooting. I'm like, what is those firecrackers? And they're like, no, get down, and people would start dropping down all around me. And then I jumped down, and I said, I got to get back out there and get my wife, because she was at the front section of the gate closest to the stage. So the Mandalay Bay, the shooter was behind us, shooting down over the top of her, and then down in front on the other side of us.
Well, as it was happening, people were hailing cab drivers and others with vehicles to help get the injured to local hospitals.
Hey, bud. Hey, right now, we need your truck. We just need to get people over to the hospital, okay?
Okay, go ahead. Put them all in the back.
Okay. Can you pull over towards the side over there? You know what? This person right here. Hold up. Can we get this person in here?
Las Vegas Police Sheriff Joseph Lombardo said police breached the shooter's hotel room and found him dead. He said it was believed that Paddock killed himself. Authorities also found an arsenal of weapons in his room. A motive for the deadly attack is not yet known.
Obviously, this is a tragic incident and one that we've never experienced in this valley. So what we're going to try to do is the best we can to get our first responders back on their feet and responding and conducting a proper investigation and ensure that we have the safety of this community at heart.
While President Donald Trump led a moment of silence on the south lawn of the White House facing the Washington Monument to remember the victims of the shooting.
It was an act of pure evil. The FBI and the Department of Homeland Security are working closely with local authorities to assist with the investigation, and they will provide updates as to the investigation and how it develops.
He ordered flags across the country to fly at half staff and plans to go to Las Vegas Wednesday to meet with first responders and console the victims and their families. White House spokeswoman Sarah Huckabee Sanders was on the verge of tears as she described some of the heroism of those who sacrificed their lives to save others as the bullets rained down.
The memory of those who displayed the ultimate expression of love in the midst of an unimaginable act of hate will never fade.
Well, as the situation, as the concert unfolded, police or people sought safety in the many hotels that line the popular tourist district. Las Vegas Airport is also in the area, and flights were temporarily halted. And we're joined now on the line by Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard. Jeff, of course, this isn't the type of story we usually talk to you about, but tragedy has struck in your hometown.
It's been a wash of emotions from the initial shock, you know. Last night as it happened, you know, I had friends storm into my room. I was watching TV and said, you got to turn on the news. And we were seeing it literally just minutes after it happened. And, you know, just there were so many questions and so many things going on. We just didn't You know, you're just in shock, first of all, you know. And when you watch things like that happens in Orlando or Manchester or all these other places, you feel for these people, but you really can't connect to it until it happens to you, you know. So when it happens in your city and it happens to your people, and it's just a whole different feeling of helplessness and confusion and anger. But as the day has gone on, it's just amazing how this town has come together. I mean, it happens in every community. You know, Orlando's strong and everywhere mm-hmm, else. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Talking for my city, it's unbelievable how this town has come together. Strangers helping each other, blood drives. They're requesting blood, you know, for the victims. And now it's going to take over a week to do that because there's so many people doing it and made appointments mm-hmm. and stuff. And being a Las Vegas native, we knew Vegas had a target on its back. We didn't know when it was going to happen. But I have to just applaud our first responders and our police. They trained. Every 6 months you see them on the news, you know, training for any kind of attack and anything going on. And they were ready. I mean, they were absolutely ready. And trauma centers set up. And it was just amazing the response to it all. But I'm shocked. I'm just in shock still. I knew some friends that were there, yes, and they're safe. My uncle runs the Mandalay Bay Event Center, you know, across the street, you know. So I was concerned that he was putting on that event for Mandalay Bay since he's in charge of that. But look, he was home that night. Mm. Through the back of my mind, my sister's a big country music fan. And I thought in the back of my mind, was my sister there? You know, she goes to these kind of events, you know. Mm. So it was just something I wasn't expecting at all, and it's just, you know, here's a guy from Mesquite, Nevada, 81 miles from Las Vegas, which is just a little picturesque old type of Vegas town, and it's just it's I think it hurts even more when it's someone local, you know, it's like one of our own, and for no reason whatsoever, you know, no mm-hmm. history of mental illness, no, you know, arrest record, nothing. It's just one of these people you can't understand why. The one thing that just can't get out of my head is now. Vegas is the entertainment capital of the world, but now we have the moniker of the worst mass shooting in U.S. history. We mm-hmm. have to live with that title, and I think that's just so regrettable. But one thing I wanted to tell you, Lori, and also all your listeners, is the one thing that people say, well, what can we do? Well, everything's being done right now humanly possible, from helping the victims to $1 million in the GoFundMe page to, you know, food and supplies, everything. The one thing that people can do, and they did this with Orlando, is if you're coming to Vegas, that is the best way to help us. It's, you know, don't be shy. Don't be scared. Off coming us, because tourism is our bread and butter. You know, just come to Vegas and don't let these guys win.
All right, Jeff, thank you so much. And now we're joined by VOA's West Coast Bureau Chief Michael O'Sullivan, who's in Las Vegas. Michael, I understand you just attended a candlelight vigil there.
I just came from a service at the Catholic Cathedral, and several hundred people, as well as some local politicians and others gathered, and it was an interfaith service. And a very nice service. People were talking about the acts of courage and caring that they witnessed and we've been hearing about among those thousands who were targets of the gunman. And, you know, and the message tonight is that that kind of, you know, coming together of the community can really combat this kind of hate that was behind this this horrendous, you know, series of killings.
I imagine the people there are pretty shocked and still pretty shaken by what's happened.
Well, they are. Nothing of this scale has happened in Las Vegas before. Nothing has happened like this in recent decades, at least with this level of violence, this level of killing and injuries. And you have to go back. We're reading, you know, the late 19th century, early 20th century. There were events of this scale, but nothing in recent decades. People are, in a sense, in a state of shock, and they're trying to figure out exactly what was going through this gunman's mind. You know, what could motivate this kind of killing? There doesn't seem to be any political ideology or religious ideology as far as anybody can tell so far. So they're just trying to figure out what was behind this, and nobody has any answers.
All right. VOA's Michael O'Sullivan, thanks for checking in with us. We'll talk to you again soon. President Trump said Monday the government has brought a tremendous amount of food and supplies into storm-ravaged Puerto Rico following criticism that his administration has been slow to respond to that disaster. The president will be traveling to the U.S. territory later today.
We are going to be seeing all of the first responders, the military, FEMA, and frankly, most importantly, we're going to be seeing the people of Puerto Rico. It's been amazing what's been done in a very short period of time on Puerto Rico. There's never been a piece of land that we've known that was so devastated. The bridges are down. The telecommunications was non-existent, and it's in very, very bad shape. The electrical grid, as you know, was totally destroyed.
Puerto Rico Governor Ricardo Rossello told a news briefing in San Juan Monday that more than 720 of the island's 1,100 gas stations are now up and running, and he expects more fuel supplies in the coming days. Puerto Rico relies on fuel supplies shipped from the mainland United States. Joining us now is VOA's Celia Mendoza, who's on the ground in Puerto Rico. So you traveled to some of the towns outside of the capital of San Juan. How are things looking there from your perspective?
One of the biggest problems, and I think that's what generates all the issues, is not communications whatsoever. They don't have electricity. Like 100% of their homes don't have no electricity. 100% of their houses, no water. 100% of their area has no phone or connectivity. So you go to very precarious situation when you are completely disconnected and you have no way to get water or and so what people have done, and this was the interesting part, is they have like water springs coming down from the mountains, so they've been collecting water that way to take showers. Some people actually drink them. They said that they're actually clean water coming from the mountain, from the little rivers that they have. And then they are just the ones that are cleaning up the road. The trees came down. Most of the wood houses are fell down, destroyed completely. It seems like more than a hurricane, if they had a huge fire that took everything. Like the mountains are completely bare. There's nothing on them. The trees became eaten by the wind. It just burned them. So it is a lot of devastation more than in San Juan. But still, in San Juan, when you walk around, you have buildings, office buildings, where it's pretty much two floors collapse in terms of no windows, all the inside is blown out. Everywhere you walk, it's a sign that is down. Nothing really has been cleaned. And then as the time goes by, what we notice mostly is the smell. It's getting worse and worse and worse. Everywhere I go, every day that
what
I
is it?
Pass
is it, the, is it, it sewage?
Worse.
Is it sewage or what is it?
It is the trash because they haven't picked up the trash. Mm-hmm. It is some of the areas are sewers, but it mostly is the food that they didn't eat, the meat that they had to throw out. So it's all this meat, animals that die that are not, you know, properly disposed. Mm. I mean, stray animals die all the time, I'm sure. But when you have all this, it's like everything gets just blown out of proportion. And then the other thing that we have felt is the heat. It feels hotter. It's not trees to kind of like give you cover. It feels very static. It's not really windy. I mean, you get some wind, but not like the typical breezy, beachy kind of feel, because you don't have the palm trees anymore. All the branches have been pulled down. And then the problem is that you don't have any more vegetation. It's just gone.
Wow. That's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Would you say the situation there is still dire, or is it getting any better overall?
Well, today, I'm actually where I'm staying. The place that I'm staying, I'm a 10th floor, so I have to go. It's right by a highway that connects the whole island. Well, not whole island, but San Juan of Puerto Rico, but then it goes from the airport to the other side. For the past few days, there's nothing in the streets. I mean, you can drive. You could actually jog in the streets if you wanted, because there was no cars whatsoever. But today, it's to a standstill. For the past 3 hours, it's been insane. And what we noticed, or at least I noticed today, is the amount of work that they're trying to do. It's been a light that was fell down here in the corner where I'm staying. And then today they were trying to pick it up, to try to fix it. I don't know if it has anything to do with president's visit, but today we saw convoys of military men. We saw the trucks from the National Guard. I saw water tanks coming in and out of this highway. Lines and lines of 18-wheelers just knocking their horns, trying to get through the people. Emergency vehicles going back and forth.
Are people there feeling a little more hopeful, or are they still feeling very as if the situation is still pretty dire?
I think in the remote areas, it depends who you talk to. I spoke to this older man, and he just felt like nothing. He's like, oh, well, a tree fell on top of my house. I'm just going to go and fix it and then just go on with my thing. You have some other people, especially those that are in shelters, they are more desperate. I spoke to two ladies. They were both in Ponce. They had been in the shelter since the 21st of September. And what they said is that they don't feel that they're getting help, that they don't feel that the FEMA is coming to them, that they have to go somewhere else. They told them that they had to go to the mayor's office and Ponce to be able to get the assistance. Some of them are very frustrated with the fact that they have to go online to register for FEMA. Some others said they told them that they can call a number, but then they don't have signal. So a lot of people said, well, they can tell a family member to sign up for them if that person lives somewhere else that they can do it. But then the problem is that some of the people haven't even talked to their family members because they don't have any signal or any phone. On the street, people are pretty much just trying to get together and do things themselves, clean up, move forward. They're not paying attention too much to the bureaucracy or to the news. In San Juan, one of the things that I noticed, the lines are getting shorter in some areas, and also the fact that they lifted the dry law, so then now they can buy alcohol, you can see people a little bit more relaxed. I don't know if it has to do anything with having the possibility of having alcohol or to have the possibility to feel that things are coming back to normal. And then some of the restaurants and the stores are opening, and that is making things feel a little bit better. And I think people here in San Juan are trying to focus on that and try to go back to work if they can. Some of the lawyers that I know, they told me that they were called to go to the court, and they were very excited that they're able to go to work.
All right. VOA's Celia Mendoza in Puerto Rico. Thank you so much. Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. Facebook will hire 1,000 people to review ads after the Russian buys. Russian opposition leader sentenced to 20 days in jail. Trial begins for a suspect in the Benghazi attack. The U.S. Supreme Court begins a new term of blockbuster cases. And find expanded coverage of all these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Catalan leader Carles Puigdemont said the region has won the right to demand an independent state after Sunday's controversial referendum on independence. Spain's government called the votes unconstitutional and sent police to stop the balloting. Clashes left hundreds of people injured. VOA's Zlatika Hoke reports.
The Spanish government has deployed thousands of police officers to stop the voters in Spain's northern Catalonia region from casting their ballots. But voters turned up in large numbers anyway, and in some places clashed with the police. Following a day of violence, the region's president announced that Catalonia has won the right to statehood.
Therefore, in the next few days, my government will send the results of today's vote to the Catalan Parliament, where the sovereignty of our people lies, so that it can act in accordance with the law of the referendum.
Spanish Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy accused the separatist government in Catalonia of making a mockery of democracy and said that no referendum took place in Spain on Sunday.
We have fulfilled our obligations. We've acted from the beginning within the law and only within the law. It has been shown that our democratic state has the resources to defend itself against an attack as serious as the one attempted with this illegal referendum.
The region's political leaders blamed Rajoy's government for the violence and said they will ask European Union authorities to denounce the actions of the Spanish state. Catalonia, Spain's wealthiest region, has lost some of its autonomy within Spain in 2010. Separatists won Catalonia's election 5 years later and set out to organize an independence vote. The Spanish constitution states that Spain is indivisible. Hundreds of Spaniards gathered in the capital, Madrid, Sunday to protest the referendum. But Catalans also have supporters around the world. Some of them joined demonstrations in the Scottish capital, Edinburgh, on Sunday.
I think that all places in the world, whether it's the Basque Country, Catalonia, Scotland, and then going elsewhere to Palestine, to Kurdistan, they all have the right to exist as nations, and I support all of these movements as well.
Police brutality on Sunday has also been condemned by some European politicians. The referendum has triggered one of the biggest political crises in Spain's 42-year-old democracy. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Hi, this is Victor Beatty, managing editor of VOA News. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.
VOA's International Edition continues. Three American scientists have won a Nobel Prize.
The Nobel Assembly at Karolinska Institutet has today decided to award the 2017 Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine jointly to Jeffrey C. Hall, Michael Rosbach, and Michael W. Young for their discoveries on molecular mechanisms controlling the circadian rhythm.
Circadian rhythms adapt one's physiology to different phases of the day and influencing sleep, behavior, hormone levels, body temperature, and metabolism. The prize for physiology or medicine is the first Nobel Prize awarded each year. The prizes for physics, chemistry, literature, and peace will be announced this week. The prize for economics is next Monday. The prize comes with $1.1 million. Turning now to our social media segment, we're joined by VOA's Andrew Palchewski. And Andrew, pretty clear what people are talking about on this very sad day for our nation.
Yeah, it's sad when we have these kind of days where really it's overwrought with bad news. The mass shooting in Las Vegas, Nevada, the worst mass shooting in U.S. history.
Just horrible.
As one headline said on social media that I saw, it's the second deadliest shooting in U.S. history in as many years. Because, of course, last year was the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando, Florida that killed 49 people. That was the most deadly mass shooting in U.S. history until this shooting on Sunday night into Monday morning.
What are people saying? I mean, I guess it's just everybody's in shock and upset.
There's a lot of shock. There's a lot of grief. People don't know where to direct that. And one thing that we've seen is people trying to do good out of this tragedy. In the Las Vegas area, people are organizing blood drives. They're trying to donate blood. There's quite a need for that with over 500 people wounded. They said it's like a war zone. So people are trying to help in that way. People are calling for action on gun control. We're seeing hashtag gun control now trending as people are trying to turn this into actionable control and ways to stop this from happening in the future. And people are using the phrase, don't say his name. They're saying that media and other social media users should not give the gunman any notoriety. You should remember the people who were killed, not the man who killed them. So out of this tragedy, people are trying to find what little shreds of good they can. And a lot of people saying that after October 2nd, they feel like it was almost a nightmare. They're waiting to wake up from a bad dream. But unfortunately, it's very much a reality. And of course, the other big story today that everyone is still talking about, reports about singer Tom Petty that he had died at the age of 66 from a heart attack. Those reports being hotly debated on social media, and it turns out after those initial reports came out that he had died, that he wasn't actually dead, that he was on life support as a result of this heart attack. So there's still question as to whether he's alive or not, what his condition is, still being poured over on social media, people trying to figure that out, but that hasn't stopped people from talking about what he's meant to them, sharing their favorite Tom Petty songs, favorite lyrics. Hashtag Free Fallen was trending. Of course, that's the song that Petty's perhaps most well known for, beloved by many people. And a lot of people praising him as a true musician, someone who sang, who played instruments, who wrote songs, was involved in a number of different bands. Another trending term was Wilburys, the Traveling Wilburys, which featured Tom Petty and Roy Orbison and Jeff Lynne and George Harrison, a great supergroup that they put together, and Bob Dylan as well.
Well, thank you, Andrew, and you can follow Andrew on Twitter at APAL. And while we don't know the status of musician Tom Petty, we are leaving you with his music and thinking of him and hoping for the best. As he once said, there's nothing so pure and healing as music. You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us anytime at voanews.com, and we thank you very much for listening. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Greg Burns. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a safe and happy day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
2017 has been marked by one humanitarian crisis or natural disaster after another. We're seeing right now a time in history where the world's on fire and there are immediate pressing humanitarian needs that we see right before us, said U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, Administrator Mark Green at a recent conference regarding U.S. humanitarian assistance and disaster relief. The United States is the world's leading humanitarian donor. Still, this year we have our work cut out for us, said Mr. Green. Today, North America and the Caribbean nations are dealing with the aftermath of three deadly hurricanes, while Mexico is responding to two powerful earthquakes in less than 2 weeks. Over the past month, USAID sent disaster assistance response teams to Mexico and countries across the Caribbean to coordinate U.S. international disaster response efforts. On the other side of the world, severe drought and armed conflict have caused food insecurity in South Sudan, Nigeria, Somalia, and Yemen, and all four countries face the credible threat of famine this year. Some 20 million people are at risk of severe hunger or starvation there. On September 26th, USAID Administrator Green announced that the United States will increase its humanitarian aid to these four countries by more than $575 million, bringing the total to nearly $2.5 billion for these four countries alone. And in South Asia, hundreds of thousands of the Rohingya Muslim people are fleeing violence in their native Burma. They are looking for refuge in Bangladesh, a country that is not equipped to handle such an enormous influx of refugees. The displaced Rohingya people in both countries, as well as the host country, Bangladesh, are in desperate need of assistance. The United States recently announced that it will provide $32 million in humanitarian relief for the Rohingya Muslims and their hosts. I want to make clear that America is and will remain the world's leading humanitarian donor, said USAID Administrator Green. Whether it's responding to an earthquake, drought, or conflict, America is committed to standing shoulder to shoulder with people in their hour of need. It is who we are as Americans.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.